Come on, you heard me. His hand closed over my arm, and it was like a bee had been set loose inside of my skull. My brain seemed to lurch full speed back into life, flooding with milky white images of the two of us sitting in front of his desk, staring at each other as a fire devoured everything around us. The images he was flooding into my mind. I don't know how he did it, but it was so real. The image was burning me up from the inside out, blistering my lungs. Pockets of acrid smoke bubbled up under my skin until it felt like I was about to burst open. My vision burned to black at the edges. Fire bloomed on my clothes, singeing my hair. This is not real. This is not real. This is not real! Clancy must have let go, or I must have found a way to twist away, because just as quickly as the fire came, it went back out, dispersing in three shaky exhales. You can't block me, he said, his eyes wide. Do you even know how to use your abilities? The file the League had on you made it sound like you could control it. Wasn't it obvious? I shook my head. That's why I'm here, I wanted to say. That's why I need you. His gaze flicked down over me from head to toe and back up again. When he spoke, his voice was soft, sympathetic. Look, I know how it is. You don't think I struggled with this, too? How lonely it is to not be able to touch someone the way you want to? How terrifying it is to be trapped in somebody else's head without knowing the way out? Ruby, everything I've learned, I had to teach myself, and it was awful. I want to save you from that. I can teach you things, tricks, how to use your talents the way they're meant to be used. I hoped he couldn't see the way my hands were shaking. Oh, God, he had offered. I hadn't even had to ask, and I still couldn't say a damn thing. Clancy's posture relaxed, and when he touched me again, flicking my braid back over my shoulder, there was no ill will behind it. Think about it, okay? If you decide you want to, just come to the office. I'll clear my schedule for you. I pressed my lips together, biting down hard on my tongue. There's nothing wrong with wanting to know how to use your abilities, Clancy added. That's the only way we're ever going to beat them. Beat who? There are so few of us left, he said. Until you showed up in the system, I actually thought I was the only one. Well, there's at least one more. His name is Martin. And he's with the Children's League, he finished. I know. I accessed their report on him. Creepy kid. When I said us, I meant the non-psychotic oranges. I snorted. I'll think about it, I said finally. I was pinned under his dark gaze again, the hair on my arm standing on end like a whisper of electricity had run over it. I took an unknowing step closer to him. Listen to your gut, Clancy said, turning to head back inside the office. A cluster of kids called out to him from where they were setting up lunch near the fire pit, and, ever the president's son, he smiled and waved at them real pretty. Listen to your gut. So why was it at odds with my head? I made a beeline for the wood dock I had discovered the afternoon before, needing to find some way to wash out the jitters racing through my heart. My mind felt tangled with the possibilities. Clancy Gray had just offered me everything I could have asked for, a way to avoid repeating what had happened to my parents and Sam, a way to be with Liam, to find Grams, to not live in constant fear of what I could do to them. So why hadn't my yes come tumbling out then? I ducked under the rope tying off the path to the lake and made it all the way down the trail before I realized anything was amiss. Crap, I said when I saw him. Oh, no. No, 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 Chubb said. The goofy grin dropped off his face, and he stopped throwing bread crusts out to the ducks gathered in the water. This is my secret hideout. No rubies allowed. I found it first, I huffed, plopping down next to him. You most certainly did not. Try a week ago while you were unpacking? He balked at that. Well, fine. But I got here first today. Aren't you supposed to be on garden duty? Got tired of hearing some girl coo about how smart the slip kid is for making them plant carrots. He leaned back. Aren't you on storage duty? I looked down at where my hands had clenched into fists. When I didn't answer, Chubb set the bread bag aside and sat up straight.
Hey, are you all right?
He put a cool hand to my forehead.
You look like you're going to be sick. Are you experiencing any migraines or dizziness?
That was an understatement. I croaked out a laugh.
Oh.
He pulled his hand away.
That kind of head trouble.
I lay back against the rough wood and threw my arm over my eyes, hoping the darkness might help dampen the headache. You said Jack taught you how to use your abilities?
Pretty much,
he said.
That was the only way I was ever going to learn, if some other kid taught me, I mean. It just took a while to decide.
Why?
Because I thought that if I didn't use them, they'd eventually go away,
Chubb said quietly.
I thought everything might go back to normal. There's scientific evidence that if we stop using parts of our brains, those sections will eventually cease to function, you know?
After a moment, he asked,
Did Clancy offer to help you with your abilities?
I nodded. I told him I'd think about it.
What's there to think about?
Chubb smacked me on the stomach with his book.
Didn't you say that you didn't know how to control it?
Well, yeah, but
I'm afraid of how much I don't know. You need to be able to control it, otherwise it'll always control you, he said. It'll scare you and manipulate you until you go crazy, die, or they find the cure. And guess which one of those things will probably happen first?
The lunch bell sounded. 2 rings for second meal. Chubb stood and stretched, throwing the rest of the bread out into the water. You really think they're going to find a cure? I asked.
My dad used to say that anything was possible when you put your mind to it.
His mouth twisted into a humorless smile. At the mention of his father, my stomach clenched. You still haven't had a chance to send them a message.
I've asked around, but there's only one computer in this entire godforsaken place, and only one person gets to use it.
That's right. The silver laptop on Clancy's desk. Did you ask him if you could use it for a few minutes?
Yeah,
Chubb said as the fire pit came into view. It looked like they were handing out sandwiches and apples.
He said no. Apparently it's a security risk if someone other than him touches it.
I shook my head. I'll ask tomorrow. Maybe I can convince him.
Could you?
Chubb grabbed my arm, his face lightening considerably.
Will you tell him that we have a very important letter to deliver, but we need to be able to look up Jack's father's new address? Tell him we'll do anything. No, tell him that I will personally lick every single pair of shoes he owns clean.
How about I just tell him that it's the whole reason we came here in the first place, I said, and leave your tongue out of it. Chubbs waited until I had taken my sandwich from the table before pulling me away. I thought he might want to eat back at the cabin or even the dock, but we wandered until we found Liam. He and a few of the other guys on the security team were on a break from their rounds and had found themselves a nice clearing in the trees. It was just wide enough to square off into 2 small teams for a quick game of hoverball, otherwise known as football with no hands. Chubbs and I found an old tree trunk to share, ignoring the small group of female spectators who had gathered to cheer the teams on. A tall redhead with an explosion of freckles on his face levitated the old football at the start of a play. He ran alongside it, trying to keep both it and himself out of the reach of the others. Liam, at one point, had the football an inch in front of him, but his hands were too slow and his footwork too bad to catch it when it was tossed to him. "Keep your eye on the ball, Butterfingers," I called. Liam's head whipped around in our direction. Just as his gaze locked on mine, Mike, who had the football at that point, mowed him over to get to the makeshift end zone. Chubbs and I cringed as Liam hit the ground and knocked his head against one of the old tree's roots.
Wow, I said. He wasn't kidding about sucking at sports. It'd be funny if it weren't so damn sad.
The other boys were too busy laughing to keep the ball in the air. Liam stayed on the ground, his face flushed red, but his entire body shaking with laughter. He lifted his shirt to wipe the sweat off his face, giving me, along with every other girl present, a glimpse of skin. This time, I was the one blushing. One of the guys I didn't recognize jogged over to Liam and helped him up, patting him on the shoulder. They laughed together like they had known each other since preschool. But that was Liam for you. He joked about Zoo making friends at the drop of a hat, but he was the same way. But Chubbs and I were perfectly content to sit by ourselves, watching, waiting, but not dipping our toes into the ocean. Maybe we had just gotten too used to being alone, and maybe that needed to change. The next morning, at exactly 9:21, I found myself standing outside of Clancy Gray's office, my hand raised and ready to knock. The only thing preventing me, besides the nerves hula-hooping my guts, was the conversation happening on the other side of the door. "Sure, we have the kind of numbers to do that. If I sent the amount of kids we'd need, there wouldn't be enough left here to maintain watch." It was a girl's voice, soft but not sweet. Olivia, most likely, if they were talking about security. "I get what you're saying, Liv, but it would be a waste to miss this opportunity," Clancy was saying. "We're getting low on medical supplies, and Lita Corp has stopped running as many trucks up through our area."
"Are you going on another one of your trips?" she pressed. "Isn't that when you usually pick up tips about shipments?"
"Why do you ask?"
"It's just, you haven't gone on one in almost a year," Olivia said, "and you used to go all the time. I know we haven't been hurting for supplies, but maybe if you met with your source..."
"No," Clancy said with finality. "I can't leave the camp anymore. It's not safe." The floorboards creaked. "Did something come up on the PSF scanner?" came Hayes' gruff voice. "They heard about the fruit stunt, obviously," Clancy said. "It would have been hard to miss considering you mutilated that driver."
"Why do you have to say it like that?"
"Because you should have just left him there like I told you to. I appreciate you wanting to spread the symbol, but couldn't you have spray-painted it on the truck?"
"Are you worried this'll be bad for our image?"
Olivia's voice dripped annoyance. "Most people are going to have a hard enough time accepting that we're not monsters, without reports about us maiming innocent people," Clancy said. "So please, keep spreading the black. Keep using the symbol. Just try for some subtlety."
"Some what, tea?"
Hayes asked. "I'm sorry to cut our meeting short, but it seems like you both have things under control and I have someone waiting for me," Clancy said. I pulled myself away from the door. "Liv, plan the hit. I'll worry about our numbers." I took a few steps back down the staircase, but it was pointless to pretend that I hadn't been listening. The door opened, and the girl, Olivia, was the first to appear. She was tall and willowy, with legs for days and a tan that made her skin glow. I shook my head and turned to allow her and Hayes to squeeze by. Olivia was probably about my age, but she looked so much older. She looked like what I imagined 20 would feel like. When I looked up again, Clancy was leaning against the door frame, grinning.
"You came."
He waved me inside and guided me toward his desk. Sitting down in one of the chairs, I had a fleeting look at the other side of his room, where the curtain had been restrung. Clancy took his usual seat behind his desk, rocking the chair back as he smiled.
"What made you change your mind?"
"It's... like you said," I mumbled, "there are so few of us left. And I want to know how I can be around the people I love and not be terrified of erasing myself."
"I read on the League's network that they weren't able to find any other oranges aside from you and Martin," Clancy said. "Most of the Reds were killed, apparently. That puts us at the head of the pack."
"I guess," I said. Another thought occurred to me. "How do you have access to the League's network and the PSFs?" I gestured around the room. "Any of this?"
"I have friends everywhere," Clancy said simply. His fingers drummed against the desk. "And my father leaves me alone because he wouldn't be able to stand the outrage if I exposed the fact that there is no rehabilitation program. Not for people like you and me."
"Me and you," I repeated. Clancy ran a hand through his hair.
The first thing you need to understand, Ruby, is that we're not like the others. Me and you, everyone classified as orange, we're different. Special. No, no, wait, I see you rolling your eyes, but you have to listen, okay? Because the second thing you have to understand is that everyone, my father, the camp controllers, the scientists, the PSFs, the Children's League, they've been lying to you this entire time. We're special not because of what we are, but what they can't make us into.
You're not making any sense, I said. He stood up and came around the desk to sit next to me.
Would it help if I told you my story first?
My eyes flicked up to meet his.
If I do, you have to promise that it stays between us.
Keeping secrets. That I could do.
All right, he said. Give me your hand. I'm going to have to show you.
When I had slipped into other minds, there had always been a queasy feeling of sinking involved in it. More often than not, I found myself dropped in the middle of a swamp of dimly lit memories and unrestrained feelings with no map, no flashlight, and no easy way of finding the way out. But there was nothing frightening about Clancy's mind. His memories were bright and crisp, full of blooming images and colors. It felt like he had taken my hand there, too, and was guiding me down a long hallway of windows into his past. We only stopped long enough for me to glance inside each of them. The office was plain, stuffed full of gunmetal gray filing cabinets, but little else. It could have been anywhere. The white paint was fresh enough that it bubbled on the wall. But I recognized the beginnings of a crescent-shaped machine in the back corner and the man staring me down from across the card table serving as his desk. He was plump and balding at his hairline and a permanent fixture in the infirmary. I watched his lips move in a soundless explanation, my eyes drifting down to the crisp stack of papers on the desk in front of him. My eyes kept drifting down to his hand resting against the table, weighing down a sheet of once-folded paper that was trying to curl back in on itself. There, at the top of it, the White House emblem. The words went into crystal focus, and I felt my eyes jump over them, drinking them in with disbelief.
Dear sirs, you may have my permission to run tests and experimental treatments on my son, Clancy James Beaumont Gray, provided these do not leave visible scars.
The lights in the office grew brighter and brighter, bleaching out the memory. When they faded again, I was in a much different room in the infirmary, this one all blue tiles and beeping monitors.
No! I thought, trying to jerk free of the Velcro restraints that held me down against the metal table. I knew what this place was. The overhead lights were drawn down closer to my face by a gloved hand. At the corner of my vision, I saw the scientists and doctors in their white scrubs, setting up machines and computers around me. My jaw was clenched shut around the leather muzzle they had strapped to the back of my head, and hands kept my head still as wires and monitors were hooked up. I struggled again, twisting my neck far enough to catch sight of a table lined with scalpels and small drills. I saw my reflection in the nearby observation windows. Young, pale with terror. A mirror image of the portraits that would later hang across the camp. The harsh light from above grew and swelled, eating the scene. When it faded, the memory had changed again. My eyes fell first on the hand I was shaking, then slid up to the unfocused eyes of the same scientist I had seen before. The men hovering around us all had that murky quality to their expressions, blank smiles, blanker eyes. I squared my shoulders, a small thrill of victory working its way through my center as I moved through the main gate to the waiting black car. The man in the suit that welcomed me in with a perfunctory pat on the shoulder wasn't the president, but he appeared in nearly every memory that fired by next, ushering me onto stages in school auditoriums, outside domed state capitol buildings, in front of cameras at the centers of small towns. Each time I would be handed the same set of note cards to read, be faced with the same expressions of hope and deep grief from the crowd. Always, my lips began to form the same words. My name is Clancy Gray,
and I am here to tell you how the camp rehabilitation program saved my life. Another light, this time from a camera's flash. When the shock of it faded, I was looking up into a face that was an older, weathered version of my own. The photographer flipped the monitor around for us to see the portrait, and I was no longer seeing myself as a boy, but a young man, 15, maybe even 16. As the photographer set up his equipment again, this time across the room, I put a hand on the president's back, guiding him around the couches to the great dark wood desk. The rose bushes were scratching intently at the windows, but I directed his focus to the sheet of paper waiting there for him and compelled him to pick up the pen. When he finished signing, he turned to me with an unfocused gaze and a numb, unknowing smile. Weeks must have passed, months, maybe even years. I felt the exhaustion creep through me, wrapping itself like a heavy chain around my center. It was dark now. I couldn't place the time of night, though I saw that it was a hotel room and not a particularly good one. I was staring up at the ceiling, half buried under the covers, when a figure seemed to peel itself out from the shadows of the closet. It was fast, almost too much for me to keep up with. A man in a black mask, the metallic gleam of a gun. I threw my covers off of me and kicked my leg out, sending the attacker stumbling back. The shot went off from his gun with a combustion of light and little sound. The smell of it scorched my nostrils. I was flipped onto my back, one of the man's forearms braced against my neck, crushing the fragile rings of cartilage. My hands lashed out, hitting the rough carpet, the nightstand, and, finally, his face. Not even the terror pulsing through every inch of me kept me from crashing into his mind. Stop. I felt my lips form the word, but I couldn't hear myself. Stop. And the man did, with the blank look of someone whose skull had just been cracked open and exposed to freezing air. He sat back, his gun on the floor at his side. I was coughing and hacking, trying to bring air into my lungs, but I grabbed the gun and stuffed it into the waistband of my pajamas. I stopped long enough to grab my winter coat from where it had been thrown across the room's desk chair, and then I was outside, in the hallway, staring at the place where a man should have been posted outside my door to guard me. And I knew what was going on. I knew what would happen to me if someone were to find me alive in the morning. I was running down the hotel stairs, out through the kitchens, out back, past the dumpsters and through the parking lot, running, my chest on fire, hearing the sound of voices shouting after me, boots pounding on the pavement, running for the trees, the darkness. Ruby! Ruby! I came back to myself in Clancy's office, bit by bit, with a headache severe enough that I had to put my face between my legs to avoid throwing up all over myself. They tried to kill you, I said when I finally found my voice. Who? Who do you think? Clancy's voice was dry. That man was one of the Secret Service agents who were supposed to be guarding me. But that doesn't make any sense. I pressed the back of my hand to my forehead, squeezing my eyes shut against the dizziness. If they were carting you around and using you to explain the rehab program, then why? Because he figured out that I hadn't been rehabbed at all, he said. My father, I mean. The only reason they let me out of Thurmond is because I made them think that I had been cured. But I got too ambitious. I tried to play my father by influencing him, and I got caught. Clancy trailed off for a moment. He was worried that the truth about the camps would get out, I'm sure, but he couldn't just take me out of the public eye, not when he'd been the one to thrust me into it. No, I think in his mind, it was easier to just get rid of me altogether before I could make trouble. I can only imagine what kind of spin he'd put on my murder to get back in the sympathetic graces of his fellow Americans. I stared at him for a long while, speechless. How did you survive that life? I wanted to ask. How are you you and not the monster they would have turned you into? After I got out that night, I met Hayes, and then Olivia, and then others. We found this place and went to work, and all the while my father couldn't put a bounty out on me, not without exposing the truth about me and his rehab program. He had to make up some lie about me attending college to get the press off his back. Clancy smiled then. So you see, I did win in the end. He rose from his chair, reaching out a hand. I took it without being conscious of it, feeling some calm wash over me as he squeezed my fingers. My head was silent. I felt myself lean forward.
When I heard your story, I knew I had to meet you. I had to make sure that you knew the truth about what was going on, so you wouldn't be caught in the dark the way I was.
The truth? I looked up, startled. What do you mean? Clancy didn't release my hand. He only sat on the edge of his desk in front of me.
The woman who broke you out of Thurmond. The League agent? What did she tell you about the white noise they used that day?
That the camp controllers had embedded a frequency in it that only oranges, reds, and yellows could detect, I said. You must have known about that. They used the same method to broadcast to the location of the camp. That they were trying to pick out any of the dangerous ones that were still hiding out. Clancy released my hand and reached back to turn his laptop so it faced us. On the screen was a snapshot of my face on the morning they had brought us into camp, but the text beside it wasn't my history.
Read the second paragraph aloud.
I looked up at him, confused, but did as he asked. Camp Controller Harris discovered the discrepancy in the calm control at 05:23 the following morning, after noticing an underlying frequency that had been added without his consent. I paused, licking my dry lips. Upon further investigation of the recording devices in the mess hall, he came to the conclusion that the outbreak of violence there that resulted in the use of the calm control at approximately 11:42 was directly provoked by undercover operatives from the terrorist group, the Children's League. He believes these same operatives planted an identification frequency in the calm control. Psi subjects 3285 and 5312, who were taken from camp boundaries at approximately 0334 by a Children's League operative, are now believed to have been mistakenly identified as green upon their initial classification.
Keep going, Clancy said when my voice trailed off.
Subjects 3285 and 5312 are believed to be highly dangerous? Orders have been issued for their immediate recapture and reprocessing. Reprocessing? My eyes flew up again. But the way this is written, they didn't know. They didn't... Are you trying to tell me that they had no idea I was an orange until after I got out?
Clancy nodded. It sounds that way.
Then I wasn't in any danger after all. They wouldn't have killed me.
Oh, you were definitely in danger, he said. They had all of the pieces, and it just took one curious mind to put it all together. But if you're asking whether or not you would have been caught if the League hadn't planted the frequency, then the answer to that is no, probably not.
Then why did they do it? I demanded. It seems like a huge risk to take to only get a few kids.
A few extremely valuable, rare kids. He corrected, kids that would have been killed otherwise.
Seeing my expression, he added, not unkindly,
You didn't really think they let any of the kids like us live, did you?
Not oranges.
Yellows, yes, because their threat can be contained. But not oranges.
I passed a hand over my face. What about the reds, then? They were killed, too?
No.
Clancy said. His voice became quiet, hesitant.
They had a much worse fate.
I waited for him to continue, hands twisting in my lap. The President's Classified Program. Clancy crossed his arms over his chest, leaning back. Project Jamboree. Dear old Dad's been training himself a special army, using all of the reds they took from the camps. So you can see why, he cleared his throat, You can see why the League would be interested in finding any particularly dangerous kids for their own. I shook my head, dropping my face into my hands. Of all of the scenarios I had imagined, of all the things I thought had happened to those kids, this was too insane for me to have ever dreamed up. How could they force them into this? I asked, my voice sounding hollow to my own ears. Why did they agree?
What other choice do they have? Clancy asked. They were made to think that if they didn't cooperate, something would happen to their families. They underwent a special conditioning program to make them think that they were needed and cared for, absolutely. Before my father and his advisors figured out I was influencing them, I was able to supervise enough of the program to ensure that they would be cared for, better than if they had been in camps, at least. He shook his head. Don't be afraid for them. They'll get out from under my father's control one day.
And they're not dead, I thought. There's that. Ruby. I looked up, feeling cold down to my guts.
Let me show you what I know, he whispered, his other hand rising to brush the hair off my cheek.
The clenched mass of nerves in my stomach eased at the touch, and I felt what few suspicions I had left about him unwinding. We were the same, in the ways that mattered. He wanted to help me, even though I had nothing to offer him in return.
No one will be able to hurt you or change you if you can fight them off, he said softly.
It wasn't depression that drove me forward. It wasn't even self-pity. It was a pure, distilled strand of hatred weaving its way through my core. I thought the slip kid would be able to help me reclaim my old life, but now I knew that wasn't enough. I needed him to help me protect my future. When I spoke, my words burned the air between us. Teach me.
23. Just because Clancy had all that power, it didn't mean he actually used it. It was strange to me that someone who could influence the thoughts of others had been born with a personality that naturally drew people to him. I witnessed it firsthand when he offered to give me a tour of the camp. Clancy waved at the few kids in black around the fire pit. His presence sent a buzz through the air. Smiles bloomed on every face we passed, and there wasn't a single person that didn't wave at us or call out some kind of greeting, even if it was just a quick, "Yo!"
Do you ever talk to any of them about what you've been through? I asked. He glanced at me out of the corner of his eye, as if the question had startled him.
I watched as he tucked his hands in the back pockets of his pants, his shoulders slumping with his thoughts.
They've put their trust in me, he said with a small, sad smile. I don't want to worry them. They have to believe I can take care of them, otherwise our system wouldn't work.
This system was something else. It's one thing to carve the Psi symbol into the side of buildings and string up banners over porches, but to actually internalize the message? My first true example of this came when the girl in charge of the camp's garden stomped up to us on the main trail and demanded that Clancy punish three kids who she believed had been stealing fruit under her nose. It took me 2 seconds of listening to Clancy talk the situation out to realize that the way of life at East River wasn't built on a foundation of hard and fast rules, but rested almost entirely on his good judgment and what everyone under him perceived to be fair. The accused were three green boys, only a few months out of cubbies. The girl in charge of the garden had left them sitting in the dark dirt like ducks in a row. Each wore black shirts, but their jeans were in different states of disarray. I stood off to the side as Clancy knelt in front of them, completely unbothered by the wet earth staining his own pressed pants.
"Did you steal that fruit?"
Clancy asked gently. "Please tell me the truth." The three boys exchanged looks. It fell on the larger one sitting in the middle to answer.
"Yes, we did. We're very sorry."
I raised my brows.
"Thank you for being honest," Clancy said. "Can I ask you why?"
The boys were silent for a few minutes. Finally, through some coaxing, Clancy got the truth again.
"Pete has been really sick and hasn't been able to come to meals.
He didn't want anyone to know because he thought he'd get in trouble for not coming to cleaning duty this week. And he didn't want to let you down. We're sorry. We're so sorry.
I understand, Clancy said. But if Pete is really sick, you should have told me.
You said at the last camp meeting that the med stuff was low. He didn't want to take any medicine in case someone else needed it.
It sounds like he needs it, though. If he's too weak to come to meals, Clancy pointed out. You know that when you take food from the garden, there's a chance that it could throw off the meals we have planned for everyone. The boys nodded, looking miserable. Clancy looked up at the kids gathered around us and asked, "What would you like them to do in return for taking the fruit?" The girl in charge opened her mouth, but an older boy stepped up and leaned the rake in his hands against the simple fence surrounding the garden.
"If they're willing to help weed for a few days, a couple of us will take turns sitting with Pete and making sure he gets meals and medicine."
Clancy nodded.
"That sounds fair. What does everyone else think?"
I thought the girl in charge was going to stamp her foot in anger when everyone else agreed on that punishment. She was deeply unhappy with the outcome, if the red in her cheeks was any indication.
"This isn't just a one-time problem, Clancy," she said, walking us out of the garden. "People think they can just come in here and take what they want, and it's not like we can lock it in the storeroom."
"I promise I'll put it on the agenda at our camp meeting next month," Clancy said with one of his smiles. "It'll be right at the top of new business."
That seemed to satisfy her, at least for now. With one curious look flung in my direction, the Empress of Vegetables turned on her heel and marched back into her domain.
"Wow," I said. "She's a real gem."
He shrugged absentmindedly, fiddling with his right ear. "She has a valid point. If we start running low on food in the storeroom, we have to lean on the gardens, and if that's been picked over, we're in trouble. I think everyone here has come to understand how interconnected life is at East River. Hey, do you mind if I stop by and visit Pete?"
I smiled. "Of course not."
The little boy was buried under a mound of blankets. If the bare mattresses around it were any indication, the other boys had gladly donated theirs to his pile. When his flushed face finally emerged from the covers, I said hello and introduced myself. Clancy stayed to speak with him for a good 15 minutes, but I waited outside in the fresh air, watching the comings and goings of the camp. Kids waved and smiled at me, like I had been there for years, not a few days. I waved back, something tightening in my chest. I don't know when it had dawned on me, or if it had been a slow, creeping realization, but I had begun to understand that black, the color that I had trained myself to fear and hate, was the same thing that allowed these kids to feel a small measure of pride and solidarity.
"You'll never feel alone here," Clancy said, shutting the cabin door behind him.
We walked to the laundry building next, then made a stop by the wash houses to test the faucets and make sure the lights were still working. Every now and then, someone stopped Clancy to ask a question or air a complaint, but he was never anything other than patient and understanding. I watched him unravel a misunderstanding between cabin mates, take suggestions for dinner, and give his opinion on whether the security team needed more kids assigned to it. By the time we reached the cabin that served as the Cubby's classroom, I was dead on my feet. Clancy, however, was ready to give his weekly lesson on U.S. history. The room was small and crowded, but well lit and decorated with colorful posters and drawings. I spotted Zoo and her pink gloves even before I saw the teenage girl at the front of the room tracing a finger down the length of the Mississippi River on an old map of the United States. Kina sat next to Zoo, of course, frantically scribbling down notes. I suppose it shouldn't have surprised me, but the kids actually cheered when Clancy appeared in the doorway. The girl relinquished the front of the room to him immediately.
"All right, all right," Clancy began. "Who can tell me where we left off?"
"Pilgrims!"
a dozen voices chimed in.
"Pilgrims,"
he continued. "What are those?"
"How about you, Jamie? Do you remember who the pilgrims were?"
A girl about Zoo's age sat straight up. "People in England were being mean to them because of their religion. So they sailed to America and landed at Plymouth Rock."
Can anyone tell me what they did after they got there? About 10 hands shot in the air. He picked a little boy close to him. He might have been a green, but he could just as easily have been a yellow or a blue. My usual method of distinguishing kids from one another was failing me now that we were all mixed together, which, I suppose, was the point.
They set up a colony?
The boy answered. You got it. It was the second English colony, after the one set up in Jamestown in 1607. Not too far from where we are now, actually. Clancy picked up the map the teacher had been using and pointed out both places. While they were on the Mayflower, they created the Mayflower Compact, which was an agreement that guaranteed everyone would cooperate and act in a way that would be beneficial to the colony. When they arrived, they faced a lot of hardships, but they all worked together and created a community where they were free from the English crown's rule and could practice their faith openly. He stopped pacing for a moment, casting his dark eyes out over his audience. Sound familiar? Beside me, Zhu was all wide eyes. I was sitting close enough to see the freckles on her face, but, more importantly, feel the happiness radiating off her. I felt my own heart lift. Hina leaned over to whisper something in her ear, and her smile only grew.
Sounds like us!
Someone called from the back of the room. You bet, Clancy said, and talked for the next hour and a half about how the pilgrims interacted with the native tribes, about Jamestown, about all the things my mother used to teach at her high school. And when he had used up all his time, he took a small bow and motioned for me to follow him outside, amidst all the groans and complaints from the cubbies. We were both still chuckling as we walked to the fire pit, where they were just starting to set up for dinner. I felt a number of eyes latch onto us immediately, but I didn't care. I actually felt a small thrill of pride. So? Clancy said as we stood beside the office's porch, listening to the bells calling everyone to dinner. What do you think? I think I'm ready for my first lesson, I said. Oh, Miss Daly. A smile curled at the edges of his lips. You already had your first lesson. You just didn't realize it. 2 weeks passed like a page tearing from an old book. I spent so many hours of so many days locked inside Clancy's room, pushing images into his mind, blocking him from trying to do the same, talking about the League, Thurmond, and White Noise, that we both fell out of sync with the camp's schedule. He had his daily meetings, but instead of asking me to leave, he had me wait on the other side of the White Curtain, where we were now conducting most of our practice sessions. There were times he had to go out and inspect the cabins or handle an argument, but I almost always stayed up in that musty old room. There were books and music and a TV at my disposal, which meant I never once had the opportunity to be bored. I still saw Chubbs at some of our meals, but Clancy often had food brought to us. Zoo was even harder to track down because when she wasn't in class, she was with Hina or one of the older yellows. The only time I really spent with the two of them was at night, before the camp's lights were shut off. Chubbs, more often than not, was a ghost, always working, looking for ways to catch Clancy's attention by stitching up the kid who'd split her lip or suggesting a more efficient way of harvesting the garden. The longest I sat with him was when he took out my stitches. Zhu, for her part, delighted in showing me what she had learned in school and the tricks the other yellows had taught her outside of it. After a few days, she stopped wearing her gloves. It only really hit me one night while she was brushing out my hair. I had pulled away to go switch off the lights, but she beat me to it. She snapped her fingers and the overhead light blinked out. That's amazing, I gushed, but it would have been a terrible lie to say I didn't feel a pang of jealousy in how much progress she had made. I had only been able to block Clancy out of my mind once, and not before he had found out about what had happened to Sam. Interesting. Had been his only comment. While I saw Zhu and Chubbs every day, Liam was a completely different matter. The security team had him scheduled for the second watch, 5 p.m. to 5 a.m., all the way at the far west end of the lake. He was usually too tired to stumble back to the cabin after his shift, and spent most of his days sleeping in the tents they had set up near that entrance. I saw him once or twice, talking animatedly to a crowd at breakfast,
or visiting with Zoo at Cubby's, but it was always from the window of Clancy's room. I missed him to the point of a real, physical ache, but I understood that he had responsibilities. When I had a thought to spare, it usually went to him, but I was so focused on my lessons that it was hard to let my mind drift to anything else for too long. Clancy laughed, drawing my attention back to him from the window, and I suddenly wasn't sure how I could let my thoughts wander. He was wearing a white polo shirt that emphasized the natural glow of his skin and pressed khaki pants casually rolled at the ankle. Whenever he was out with the others, he was properly buttoned up, his clothes clean and ironed within an inch of their lives. But not with me. Here, we didn't have to put on any show, not for each other. When we first started these lessons, it had been from either side of his ridiculous desk. It felt like I was squaring off against a school principal, not being guided through a psi lesson by my freak guru. Next, we had tried the floor, but after a few hours of sitting, my back felt like it was ready to crumble. He had been the one to suggest sitting on his narrow bed. He had taken one end, and I had taken the other. Then we started inching closer, bridging the distance on his red quilt, nearer to each other with each lesson, until one day I snapped out of whatever haze Clancy's dark eyes had put me in and realized our knees were pressed up against one another. "Sorry," I mumbled when I turned back to him. "Can we go from the top?" He found everything about me amusing, apparently. "Take it from the top. Are we rehearsing for a play? Should I get Mike in here to start building props?" I'm not sure why I laughed at that. It wasn't even all that funny. Maybe trying to throw my brain at his for the last 20 minutes had made me loopy. The only thing I seemed sure of was how big and reassuring his hand felt as it took mine and squeezed. "Try again," he said. "This time, try to imagine that those invisible hands you were telling me about are actually knives, cut through the haze." Easier said than done. I nodded and closed my eyes, trying to fight back the flood of color in my cheeks. Every time he used my lame way of explaining how my brain seemed to work, I felt embarrassed, even a little bit ashamed. He had laughed the first time I made the comparison, waved his fingers in front of my face like he was casting a spell over me. He had tried a number of different methods to try to demonstrate how to do it. We'd gone down to the pantry so I could watch him slip into Lizzie's mind and, for no other purpose than to make me laugh, ask her to cluck like a chicken. Clancy had tried to show me how easy it was to affect the moods of multiple people at once, settling an argument between two kids without saying a single word. At one point, we'd sat on the stoop of the office and he'd read me the thoughts of everyone who passed by, including poor Hina, who was apparently harboring a desperate crush on Clancy. The truth was, he could do everything and anything. Block me out, push in an image, a feeling, a fear. Once I was sure, he had even passed on a dream to me. I didn't want to feel like I was disappointing him, not when he was giving me so much of his precious time. The thought made everything inside of me clench with fear. He told me to take it slow, that it had taken him years to master all of this. But it was impossible not to want to rush through the lessons, to get a grip on my abilities as soon as possible. It seemed to me that the best way to repay his kindness was to master myself to the point where I could stand beside him and feel pride, not shame, in what I could do. Until I could unlock his secrets, we were never going to be equals. He had called me his friend several times during our lessons and in front of other kids, and it surprised me how much I recoiled at the term. Clancy had hundreds of friends. I wanted to be more than that. I wanted him to trust me and confide in me. Sometimes I just wanted him to lean closer, to tuck my hair behind my ear. It was a repulsively girly thought, though, and I wasn't sure what dark corner of my mind it had come crawling out of. I think my head was playing tricks on me, because I knew what I really wanted was for Liam to do that. Do more than that. But every time I tried to slip into Clancy's mind, I was thrown back. Clancy had so much control over his powers that I didn't even have time to feel the usual disorienting rush of thoughts and memories. Every single time, it was like he had drawn a white curtain around his brain. No amount of tearing could bring it down. That didn't mean I didn't try, though. Clancy smiled, reaching over to brush my hair back over my shoulder. His hand lingered there, sliding over to cup the back of my neck. I knew he was staring at me, but I couldn't bring my eyes up to meet his, even as he leaned closer. "You can do this. I know you can." My teeth clenched until I felt my jaw pop. A muscle twitched in my right cheek. I tried drawing the hundreds and thousands of wandering fingers together, focusing them into something sharp and lethal enough to penetrate his wall. I squeezed his hand, increasing my grip until I'm sure he felt pain, and threw the invisible dagger toward him, diving in as fast and hard as I could. And still, the moment I brushed up against that white wall, it felt like he had reached over and slapped me across the face. He sighed and dropped his hand. "Sorry," I said, hating the silence that followed.
"No, I'm the one that's sorry." Clancy shook his head. "I'm a terrible teacher."
"Trust me, you are not the problem in this equation."
"Ruby, Ruby, Ruby," he said. "This isn't an equation.
You can't solve it in three easy steps, otherwise you wouldn't have accepted my help, right?" I looked down as he began to rub his thumb over my upturned palm, a slow, lazy circle. It was strangely calming and almost hypnotizing to watch. "That's true," I began. "But you should know I haven't exactly been honest." That got his attention. "The others, they were looking for you because they thought you were some magic man that could get them home. But I wanted to look for you because I was banking on the rumors that you were an orange and that you might be willing to teach me." Clancy's dark brows drew together, but he didn't let go of my hand. Instead, he rested his other palm on the sliver of space between our crossed legs. "But that was before I told you what the League was planning for you," he said. "What did you want me to help you with?" "No, let me guess. Something to do with what happened to your parents, right?"
"How I erased myself," I confirmed. "How to keep it from happening again."
Clancy closed his eyes for a brief moment, and when he finally opened them, his eyes seemed darker than before, almost black. I leaned in closer, picking up on a strange mix of sadness, guilt, and something else that seemed to be seeping through his pores.
"I wish I could help you with that," he said. "But the truth is, I can't do what you can. I have no idea how to help you."
"I have no idea how to help you." Of course. Of course he didn't. Martin was an orange too, but he didn't have the same abilities I did. I wonder why I'd assumed the slip kid would.
"If you tell me about it and explain how you think it works, then I might be able to figure something out."
It wasn't so much that I couldn't talk about it. It was that I didn't want to. Not right then. I knew myself well enough that I could predict the choked words and teary explanation that would follow. Every time I let myself think about what had happened, I always came out the other end exhausted and shaking, feeling every bit as scared and hopeless and horrific as I did when those moments had actually occurred. He watched me from under those dark lashes of his, a look of understanding quick to come, his thumb hovering over the pulse point in my wrist.
"Ah, it's a Benjamin. I should have expected that. I'm sorry."
Seeing my look of confusion, he explained,
"Benjamin was my old tutor back, well, back before everything went to hell. He passed away when I was very young, but I still can't talk about it. Still hurts."
One side of his mouth curled up in a rueful smile.
"Maybe you don't have to say anything at all, though. We could try something else."
"Like what?"
"Like you blocking me this time, not the other way around. I bet it'll be easier for you."
"Why do you say that?"
"Because you're not vicious enough to put up a good offense. Trust me, that's a compliment."
He waited for me to smile before continuing. But you are guarded. You don't show your cards to anyone. There are times that you are impossible to read.
I don't mean to be, I interrupted.
Clancy only waved me off.
It's not a bad thing, he said. In fact, it'll help you.
Well, it certainly hadn't helped me fend off Martin.
Can you sense when someone is trying to break into your head? He asked. There's a tingling sensation.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. What should I do when I feel it?
You have to push right back up against them, throw them off whatever track they might have been on.
In my experience, the things you really want to protect, like memories or dreams, they have their own natural defenses. You just need to add another wall.
Every time I tried to get into your head, it was like a white curtain blocked me.
Clancy nodded. That's the way I do it. When I feel the sensation, I push back the image of that curtain and I don't let up, no matter what. So what I want you to do is bring to mind some kind of secret or memory, something you wouldn't necessarily want me or anyone else to see. And I want you to drop your own curtain down to protect it.
I must not have been doing a good job of hiding my hesitation, because he took both of my hands in his again, lacing our fingers.
Come on, he said. What's the worst that could happen? I see some embarrassing moment.
I think we're good enough friends now that you can trust me when I say I won't tell a soul about any falls or public puking.
What about streaking and eating playground sand?
He pretended to consider it for a moment, grinning.
I suppose I could refrain from sharing that with the entire camp at dinner.
What a fair, just leader you are, I said. After a moment, I added, Do you really consider me a friend? Or are you just saying that because you want to see me get my four front teeth knocked out when I tried to play soccer?
Clancy shook his head and laughed. His favorite stories always seemed to be the ones that involved me trying to pretend I was a boy, or the fast food binges my dad used to take me on when my mom was out of town at a teacher's conference. They were so completely foreign to his experience, I realized, that I must have seemed like an alien.
Of course I consider you my friend.
Actually, he began, his voice low. When he glanced at me again, his dark eyes were burning with a kind of intensity that made me feel like my head was full of air, ready to float away.
I consider you a lot more than that.
What do you mean?
You may have been looking for me, but let's just say that I was waiting for you. It's been a long time since I felt like someone understood what I was going through. Being an orange, you can't compare it to what the others are. They don't understand us or what we can do.
It's only us, came a small voice in my head. It's just the two of us. I squeezed his hands.
I know.
His attention seemed to wander, his eyes carrying over to the other side of the room, toward his computer and TV. I thought I detected a glimmer of sadness in his eyes, a real kind of pain, but just as quickly, it was gone, replaced by his usual confident expression.
You ready to try?
I nodded.
I promise I've been trying. Please, please don't give up on me.
I was surprised when I felt his hands pull free from mine, stunned when I felt them glide up my bare arms and over my shoulders. I didn't stop him. This was the thing about Clancy, the thing I was quickly coming to terms with. With him, I didn't have to be afraid, not of what I could do intentionally or by mistake. I didn't have to throw up every defense I possessed to keep my brain's wandering hands still, because Clancy was more than capable of keeping me out of his head. But Liam, he was something precious, something I could break with a single misstep, someone I couldn't be with, not right then, not the way I was.
Clancy leaned forward to begin his work. I leaned forward, too, right up against his chest, where it was warm and smelled of pine and old books and thousands of possibilities I had never known.
I didn't block him on the first try. I didn't even block him on the fifth try. It took 3 days, and his witnessing almost every sour, cheek-reddening memory in my head
for me to finally throw up some kind of defense.
Think deeper, he told me. Think about something you wouldn't want anyone else to know. Those memories will provoke your strongest defenses.
There wasn't anything left that he hadn't already seen. I swear the kid could have been a brain surgeon for how sharp and accurate his pokes and prods were. Every time